This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on remote. I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we are featuring a brand new anthology. The Washington Writers Publishing House has put together poets from Virginia, D.C., and Maryland, and the editors are here, but they are writers first. Let's not forget that. So we're going to hear a little bit from them before we go into the book. This is what it looks like. Let's hear a poem from Jonah. Jonah Colson is the poetry editor for the Washington Writers Publishing House.
Thank you, Grace. Wonderful to be here. This poem is called The Wicked Witch of the West. All I wanted was my sister's shoes, a conjuring pair of ruby-studded slippers to remind me of her before the farmhouse plunged down and struck her in mid-spell. I had no intention of hunting the girl and her dog, or the three ignorant friends she made. I do not like to use my power. All comes back threefold in buckets of water that drown me. I can see all of my mistakes. No one is forever loyal. Not even guards or monkeys that I winged in a rush of gratitude.
Gorgeous. Jonah is the poetry editor for the Washington Writers Publishing House. His poems have been in Plowshares, the Southern Review, the Massachusetts Review, and his translations have been elsewhere. We will feature that later. Next is Caroline Bock, who is the fiction editor for the Washington Writers Publishing House. And here she is with her own fiction.
Oh, thank you, Grace. Thank you, Jonah. I'm so thrilled to be here. I have been working on a new novel. It's set in New York City and in D.C. in the weeks following 9/11. I really thought I would never be able to write about that time. I'm a former New Yorker, like you, born and bred. I've moved down here to the DC area about 8 years ago, but 20 years ago, I was in New York. I worked in New York City at the time. And only now during the pandemic did I think I could actually write about that time, which as we know is 20 years ago this year. So this is an excerpt from a novel very much in the works called I Want to Know What Love Is. And it's being told from a first-person point of view from a woman named Amy Greenberg, who's a TV executive, a career I used to have. So here's the excerpt. I want to know what love is. 9 o'clock, I call it quits. Downstairs, I say goodnight to Joey V, the night security guard. Haven't seen you around, he says, lumbering over to open the door for me. I'm laden down with two shoulder bags. Commuting from D.C. Husband got a job down there. No way! You still got your place in the city? He's waved down 100 taxis for me, shouted out my address to the drivers. Even once, when I was 9 months pregnant and I wasn't sure I'd make it to the hospital, told the driver he'd kill him if he had to read in the New York Post that my baby was delivered in the back of his cab. Gave it up, I say. No way! He holds open the brushed gold brass door. Need a cab? Not tonight, Joe. He's looking at me as if he's worried about something, as if he has heard about the company sale, as if he is already missing us. Have a good night, Joe. As I tread out into the warm for December misty night. Stay safe out there, Ms. G. This is what work is. Not only the big meetings or trips, not the goals and objectives, not the budget tracking reports and the HR issues. This is what work is, having Joey V know that you haven't been around, that you're working late, that something is off kilter in the world. How can I ever leave it?
The voice of Caroline Bock, who is the fiction editor of the Washington Writers Publishing House. And she is the author of Carry Her Home, which was the winner of the 2018 Fiction Award from that house, and a young adult novel, Lie and Before My Eyes, from St. Martin's Press. As we hear, there's another one forthcoming. So here are our writers who put their skills together to create a light for other writers. And Jonah, tell me the name of this anthology.
The name of the anthology is This Is What America Looks Like, the Washington Writers Publishing House Anthology, Poetry and Fiction from D.C., Maryland, and Virginia.
And Caroline and Jonah, first of all, Caroline, what is in it, who is in it, and what is it about?
Well, who's in it is an easy question. We have 100 writers from across the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area, and also people who may have had roots here. So if they worked here, if they went to school here, we really try to encourage a wide swath of people who had connections to this area. It's the first anthology from the Washington Writers Publishing House in 25 years. And the name really says it all. This is what America looks like, which we thought at the time would be about the social justice reckoning that was happening in the country. If we think back 2 years ago with the women's marches, that's really where the initial idea came from. Mm. However, we had the idea and the world had its own idea. There's an old saying, man plans and God laughs.
So Jonah, what did it take? Just what did it take? The process, the gathering, the thinking, the time, just what did it take?
In the beginning, when we were talking, and even when we initially opened Submittable for submissions, it didn't take much. And I think, you know, Caroline would agree. It was like, oh, you know, we're waiting. You know, hopefully we get submissions. Hopefully this, you know, takes on. And then the pandemic hit. And then the Black Lives Matter movement. And suddenly people were home and people were seeing this happening in the American narrative, these, you know, horrors and being isolated. And then suddenly we were flooded with submissions, and over 500 pieces came in. They were responding immediately to the pandemic. They were responding to the nationwide protest for racial injustice. And then it became, wow, this is a project. But I was so grateful for it, because this summer, working on it last summer, I think got me through.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful project. It fed my spirit, and it was a lot of work, but it was such good work. And you knew that you were pushing these writers and elevating these writers into a wonderful book where they belong.
Oh, yes. To be citizens of the Poetry Republic, you guys get an A+. Caroline, at some point, did you think, what was I thinking? What was I thinking? Really? Because you got 111 pages or submissions out of 500, right. 111, right?
Right.
And how did you navigate that? What was your absolute criterion?
Well, at the beginning, which we opened up submissions in February of last year, so right before the pandemic, what we were really thinking is we wanted close observations on America today, thinking that people would talk about the political atmosphere, particularly writers who have connections with DC. And what we got were these incredibly personal accounts. The political became personal like overnight. And it was daunting. you know, because we got such good works that initially we thought we would just have 50 writers, and we ended up having 100 writers and 111 separate works.
Jonah
was very brave and said he would accept 3 to 5 poems. So we actually received probably close to 1,000 separate works because the poets, of course, were writing their hearts out.
Jonah, what did you learn about poetry?
There's
a lot of it.
Yes.
But what is going on in poetry by what you have published in this book? What can you say is happening right now? As Caroline points out, it does seem to come through time immemorial.
Absolutely. I think one thing that I learned about poetry right now is its way to capture something happening in the immediate and to distill that language and the image, right? The image drives the poem, the content holds the poem. And with the form, we got so many different kind of forms here. Many of the poets were playing with form. We have almost prose. We have very sort of short lyric. And I learned that any sort of form of poetry, the content, can hold amazing moments that are happening right now.
I love that word, hold. That's a beautiful word for form and for art. And Caroline, can you believe all the words the prose people know? They know so many words. They have almost all the words.
Well, Ed, they have the words, and I think there felt like there was a unity between the poetry and the fiction, which we weren't, I think, exactly expecting, that voices that were really striving to understand on the fiction side matched the poetry side. And it wasn't just the words, because we have a combination of flash fiction, so shorter pieces that are under 1,000 words, to full-length short stories. I think the longest story is about 3,000 words. We did have a cutoff so that we could get to 100 writers. When we made that goal, we wanted 100 terrific writers, both young and more established writers. We wanted writers that, you know, had the diversity of the DMV area represented, and we made a lot of effort on that. But it was more the voices that people captured. The voices, on one hand, a young Vietnamese American, and on the other hand, a waitress from the Waffle House.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Jonah, tell us a bit about why you're going to read what you are going to read to us and why you chose it. Set it up a little bit for us.
Sure. So the first poem I would like to share from the anthology is from an established...
Oh, give the title of the anthology every time there's a lull.
Gotcha. The poem I'm going to read from This Is What America Looks Like, Poetry and Fiction from D.C., Maryland, Virginia, is from an established poet. From Linda Paston, we have in here called The News of the Day. And I think it's a wonderful poem to share here because it sort of gives an overall of really what was happening last year. But unfortunately, it can still be relevant in any point of time in our history. So I think it gives a wonderful idea of what else is included in this anthology, the theme that Mrs. Paston touches on here. The News of the Day by Linda Paston. The green earth is spinning out of control. The politicians fly through closed windows, breaking the glass. And doctors are wringing their hands, entangled in stethoscopes. Green raindrops are only dollar bills. The children, wide-eyed, lurk under their desks. And writers complain that their pens have run out of ink. Policemen write their tickets for 1,000 abandoned cars. Slow down. Like a bellows, breath, the air in and out. But wait, the air too is dangerous.
Jonah, you read beautifully. Are you an actor as well?
I am not an actor.
Okay, think about it. But that is beautifully. I don't know why I get tears in my eyes, because just the miracle of poetry, just the miracle of it. I never stop I'm always amazed. And Caroline, what did you choose to highlight?
Well,
is it going to make me cry?
I hope not. But I do have a leaning toward very lyrical writing too. I'm not a poet. I'll write an occasional poem, but I love lyrical, rich fiction writing. And the first piece I'm going to read is actually from a brand new writer who's become, he's just the nicest guy. He shows up at all the readings and he sent us this piece, and it was one of the first pieces he's ever had published. And he's a Vietnamese writer from, a Vietnamese American writer from Virginia, and his name is Andrew Tran. And it's a short story about house sitting. It's named Garcon Insurance, which are the name of two cats that are in the story. I'm just going to read the opening paragraph. And I also think it does speak to this moment, especially for young people who find themselves isolated. And it's so hard. So Garcon Insurance, in our anthology, This Is What America Looks Like, by Andrew Tran. I was concerned about everything and concerned about nothing. As I sat on my front porch and drank a cup of black coffee mixed with oat milk, I was figuring out how my brain worked. I had severe depression and anxiety, and I was just learning how to cope. I left my front porch and went into my house. I walked upstairs to the second floor and went into my bedroom, climbed out of the window, and stepped onto the roof. I laid my back down on the rough shingle tops and soaked up the bright sunlight, knowing even if I could never figure out the meaning of life, at least I had my drawbacks. I was sleep deprived and looking into the sky, trying to see if there were angels flying around the cluster of clouds. No angels dropped down from the clouds, which made me disappointed.
Mm.
Not a single bird flew by either. I was 19 years old and I believed in communism, but I was also Vietnamese American, which gave my belief system irony. And then I realized I was lying to myself and that I believed in nothing.
He's good. So Caroline, you study with Raymond Carver at Syracuse.
Yes.
What did you learn?
Wow. Well, that was a while ago. I think I may have been in Ray's last creative writing class. I learned how to appreciate every single word. He was meticulous. In fact,
To the bone.
Yes. I studied short story writing with him and poetry with Tess Gallagher.
Not bad.
It was an incredible experience. In fact, I recently, just this past week, reread his poem Gravy, which was written at the end of his life.
I know that poem.
Yes.
Jonah, what were you translating? I saw on your bio that you're a translator. From what language to what language? From English to English?
No, I just actually finished translating two books of poetry by a Uruguayan author, Miguel Avedo. So I've translated from Spanish into English.
So you know Spanish?
I've studied Spanish. I'm not fluent, but I've studied enough to carry on a conversation and to be able to read and translate.
Did you get the work in flat English and then you made it poetry? Or did you translate it from English, from the Spanish, and then literally you took it from that to English?
Correct.
Did somebody do something in between?
No, it was all me. I did from the poem in Spanish to direct the poem in English, which took me two books, took me about 4 years.
Why did you want to do that particular language?
Well, I studied it. I love languages. I studied a little bit of Portuguese in undergrad. But I was introduced to this poet when I was working on a previous project with Jesse Leaker Chervil out of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And this poet, I kind of fell in love with him. And he's a younger poet living in Montevideo, Uruguay. And we had contact and he sent me all of his books. And I was like, this is a great project.
And this would never be known if it were not for you.
Yes.
And that is the way. If we don't cross those bridges, then the lights will never go on. I'm so grateful to you both. Let's hear something else from the anthology.
Sure. I would like to read, this poem is from Nabila Washington, who is a young poet, African-American poet that I met when I gave a reading a few years ago in Tacoma Park Arts Center. And this poem is called Sifting America's Garden. And I think it offers a different perspective than the previous one by Linda Paston. Sifting America's Garden by Nabila Washington. After the pronouncement and cries of rage and several calls and transportation of the body, after the body is tagged and bullets extracted and organs discarded and insides further ravaged, after the gloves are tossed, sorry for your loss, and the coffin is picked and body fitted, after it's tucked beneath soil and protests expire and whimpers grow faint and aches are suppressed, after the body has settled and ephemerals spring forth and visitors frisk the tomb where stolen black bodies are planted, a community yearns to breathe again. That's the first poem in the anthology.
Why does poetry matter so much?
I think very often poetry seems to highlight these moments in our lives. I often ask my students, when do you hear poetry? And they say, weddings, funerals, baby showers, graduations, right? So poetry seems to mark these occasions. And again, you have to wonder, that's because that's the power of the words, the power of the distilled language and image. And we crave poems at moments of celebration and crisis.
Wow, that's a good answer. It's a good answer. I had some sixth graders in a class last week, and I asked them what poetry was. And the little girl said, it's about feelings. Ooh. And I said, oh my gosh, she didn't say it's about rhyming. I think we're raising consciousness. Jonah is a professor at Montgomery College in Maryland and lives in DC. And you have also had much work in very prestigious magazines like Prairie Schooner, Tupelo Quarterly, The Writer's Chronicle. You've had many fellowships. Are you happy? Are you happy, Jonah?
I am happy, but you know, as a writer, the work is never done.
We have more happiness ahead.
You're like, oh, I want to get into that journal. I want to interview this person.
Yes.
You know, it's never done. So, but yeah.
The people that make money have no fun whatsoever. I know. So, Caroline, give us something else from the anthology.
Well, I thought I would share Danielle Stone Hirsch's story about the Waffle House, because it so captures a voice that we don't often hear in literature enough, or we don't hear it enough. And she is a young 30-something writer, new mom. She's someone I've mentored as a writer, so I was thrilled when she submitted this work. It's called Waffle House, and here it is in our This Is What America Looks Like anthology. Waffle House by Danielle Stone Hirsch. When the Waffle House closes, you know it's time to get the F out of town. Waffle Houses never close. Even FEMA recognizes that shit. It's called the Waffle House Index, and they have occasionally used it to determine how seriously we ought to be taking hurricanes. Just last year, I was driving home in the snow, regretting ignoring the warnings. I was peering through the windshield, squinty-eyed, wipers going at full power, crawling along thinking, Lord, here we are in my time of need. Please show yourself and light the way to heaven. As I wondered how on earth I was going to recognize my exit through the blinding white, there was the light of the Waffle House. Right before exit 3, guiding the way home, I passed it slowly, so slowly I could count the people sitting in the grimy booths, backs pressed to the cracking red plastic. I knew I was going to make it. The Waffle House is America's guide, the light in the storm. The Waffle House is also my employer, though for $8.46 an hour, I don't feel a huge sense of loyalty. I work at Target for $8.50, but that extra 4 cents they give me over the minimum wage buys them exactly 4 extra cents worth of my gratitude. And we all know that in America today, 4 cents isn't worth shit. Before Grandma passed, she told me stories about penny candies and nickel stores. But all I see these days are $5 generals along the highway. And I have to work a full hour to afford a bag of Hershey Kisses.
So smart, so important, so significant.
Yes.
Jonah, equal opportunity. Just open the book and just give us one more poem out of the book.
Okay, so since I read that first poem, I would like to read the very last poem in the book. And this is by, if you don't mind, I'll pretend I just opened it up. And there it is.
I thought you could be an actor.
So this poem is called The Circus Is Here by Fran Abrams. And we organized the writers from Z to A, and it just happened to fall that this was the last poem. And I think it's a wonderful way to end the anthology. Again, sort of taking in so many of the narrative threads that have been from all the writers here. The Circus Is Here by Fran Abrams. Why would anyone go to the circus anymore? We know wild animals are not happy to be tamed. Performers can be killed. It's true someone shot Cecil the lion in the wild. A Cirque du Soleil aerialist fell to his death on a stage in Florida. Why pay the price of admission to a circus? If you want to see wild animals bleed, watch the adventures of the uber rich. If you want to see people die, watch the news.
Wow. Caroline,
yes. Read
us your own work as we go out, and then we'll finally hear another poem from Jonah.
Oh, I would love to. I'm going to read actually the section that follows exactly after the earlier section of my novel. And my novel again is I Want to Know What Love Is, set right after 9/11. So here is my main character speaking, Amy Greenberg. I wandered down along a near deserted 34th Street, past 7th toward 8th, looking for a slice of pizza, a perfect slice of New York pizza. It's long past the hours when crowds stampede toward Penn. No Knicks or Rangers game tonight. A homeless man with a knit wool cap with pom-pom hunkers into the doorway of an office building. Pot wafts up the empty street, exhales from a lanky security guard at the next building, who nods and says in a smoky voice, "Evening, ma'am." He punches the blunt and inhales and spots a cop across the street. He flicks the very end of it into the gutter, glancing at me as if we were conspirators. I don't care. I'm wandering. I'm pretending I don't have to make a train. I don't have to be home to face a husband facing heart surgery. I don't have to be a mother or sister or daughter. I don't have to have someone at my office door, no deadlines, no calls to be returned. I'm nobody, a 40-some-year-old lady wandering in the silvery fog rolling in from the Hudson. What's strange about the night? Quiet, a city holding its breath. Street lights shine, yellow and diffuse, and the city sinks into my skin. Should I keep wandering across 8th? There should be a pizza place open on 9th. I'd die for a slice, for greasy fingers, for cheese burning the roof of my mouth. But I wait for the light to turn green so I don't get killed crossing the street. A string of police cars turn the corner, one following the other. The squad cars park along 34th Street, facing eastward. A dozen or more, many more, police cars flash their red lights without sirens. They aren't breaking the quiet. It's like I'm in a silent movie. The homeless man grips the bricks on the side of his building and pulls himself upright. Maybe he thinks they are coming for him. The guard looks warily from them to me and up and down the street. He doesn't like what he sees. All these cops and no sign of trouble anywhere. My left shoulder aches from an overstuffed shoulder bag. I move it to my right shoulder. My back aches. Cross the street. Forget the pizza. Don't miss your train. Something is happening here. Something out of the ordinary. Don't stay. Don't get involved. This is what this city does to you. When you think you've seen everything you'd ever want to see, it shows you something you'd never thought you'd see. The traffic lights all along 34th Street turn red all at once. Red lights softened by the fog, light like globules of blood glowing up and down the long block, blood from the Hudson River to the East River. More cars. Official black sedans with the single red light perched on the edge over the driver's seat make their way as if they've risen from the river in this procession. More patrol cars with their lights on and no sirens follow. The police assemble shoulder to shoulder in front of their vehicles. Blocks of cops. At the end of the line near me, one cop salutes. My cop from earlier in the day. She's not circling now. She salutes and the others all follow. She got out of One World Trade Center and her partner didn't. He was supposed to be right behind her. He was helping one more person. His remains will be among those passing, among those now going home. More people have appeared to line both sides of the block. Maybe they were there waiting all along. I wish Jack was here, or Owen, or Pop. The security guard steps next to me at the edge of the curb. He isn't slouching now. His black knit cap is off his head and against his heart. He has been thinking of joining up. He could see himself as one of those helicopter pilots or army rangers. So many of his friends from the block have joined. Maybe he will. He will have to stop his favorite hobby, smoking pot, for a while. But he can, no problem. The homeless man stands on swaddled, swollen feet, clutching his pom-pom knit cap, hair badly needing to be washed and cut. He has remembered his military training. He served 2 tours in Vietnam. He was honorably discharged. He even has a medal or 2 somewhere. He remembers a Marine never leaves a fellow Marine behind. We bring them home. He stands up straighter. The fog, the quiet, the flashing red lights, the men and women of the New York City Police Department standing at attention along 34th Street. All this is set up for what is next. The ambulances, one after another, after another, after another, after another, and more police squad cars and more ambulances. And I don't know how or why I found myself here. They are bringing home the remains of the dead, our dead. I drop my bags between my legs so I can stand up straighter. I cover my heart with my hand because I don't have a hat to remove. I hold my breath, too.
Detail, detail, psychological action. What is the title of this forthcoming novel?
I Want to Know What Love Is.
Caroline Bock. Jonah, do you have two poems for us?
Sure.
Of your own?
Yes, I do.
These are to our editors, everyone. And remember that, not just editors. So let's have two from you, Jonah.
Well, the first one I read earlier, The Wicked Witch of the West, I've always, of course, that's inspired by The Wizard of Oz. And in this early writings of this new manuscript I'm putting together, I find myself trying to speak in a voice of the villain, because I've always been interested in villains. They're always my favorite characters. And here, this one sort of is inspired after a Wallace Stevens poem called Disillusionment at 10 O'Clock. And this one is called Dream from the Tiger. It's from the tiger's perspective that makes an appearance in Wallace Stevens' original poem. Dream from the Tiger. Catch me again in red weather, old sailor, tired of traveling and deserted boats, but still demanding tendrils of vanilla and periwinkle. Don't you remember? Your sleep was like two hands firmly parting my fur. We can return to this dream and dry into the shape of lace and light, striped and golden, so we don't disappear, and we gather what we need in my teeth.
Beautiful.
And one last very, very short poem. This poem is circulating somewhere on the inside of a bus in Arlington Arts.
Wow, I'll buy a ticket.
One of I think, six or seven poems that were chosen. This is Ode to Post-Virus. It will be here again. The summer with its vow of greens and ripening. It will be here again. The world we know. Our short life in a long day of light and touch. It will be here again, and we will find what we lost.
Worth the trip.
Oh,
worth the trip.
Wonderful.
Oh, Jonah Colson and Caroline Bock, I love you both. Thank you so much for being here. Jonah, what is the title of a book that people can write, go out and buy right away today?
This is What America Looks Like.
And what about your own book also?
Oh, my own book. My own book called Said Through Glass, which won the 2018 Gene Feldman Award from the Washington Writers Publishing House.
Right. And Caroline, tell us a book of yours that they can go out and get on their lunch hour.
Well, I am also going to put a shout out for the Washington Writers Publishing House. Carry Her Home. It's 47 short stories ranging from flash to full length that won the 2018 Fiction Prize from the Washington Writers Publishing House. And more than that, brought Jonah Colson into my life.
Into all of our lives.
Yes.
And I know. And if you hadn't won those awards, then we wouldn't have had this anthology. So it's all good. It keeps, as they say, keeps on giving, right?
Yeah.
So Jonah Colson, Caroline Bock, this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress on remote. And it has been brought to you by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, ME2 Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Bravada Foundation of the Logan family and the Sinipet Fund, and support from Avi Day Shoshani. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.